Hi, my name is Salema Mabena Masakela. I'll say it for you one more time. Salema Mabena Masakela. And you are listening to the What Shapes Us podcast. You are listening to, what's it called? The What Shapes Us podcast. Hey, I am a fool. I don't know where that ad-lib came from, and I honestly don't know why I sing the song. The What Shapes Us podcast theme song. Welcome. My name is Salema Mabena Masakela. Your captain, your flight attendant. I also load the luggage onto this plane. So thank you for flying with me. Machete, the producer, right now I could hear him cursing, even though he's not in the room, just being like, bro, I have this thing recorded. The song's there. Like, why do you sing it every time? It's because it puts me in the mood, in the zone, to hang out with y'all and present you with another episode. It's my mantra. You know, I just sing this little ditty and it's my mantra. It centers me for our conversations in a wonderfully unpredictable planet Earth in the year 2022. Since our last conversation, a war had just begun, the invasion of Ukraine. And everyone thought that thing was going to go real quick. And the Ukrainians were like, actually, yeah, we can't lay down. We love our homeland too much. So we're going to have to fight. And we're going to fight in ways that you didn't know was possible. Well, it sounds like I'm making a joke. It's just, I have no comprehension of what war is and or what it could be. We broadcast the daily results of wars like you're watching SportsCenter. And the highlight reels are, they're in the mostly not top 10. As you see, families ripped apart and death. Yeah, people fleeing for their lives, trying to pick up the pieces in a new place because they were forced to leave, which is really what happens all around the world in various ways. A lot of times in the respective countries, like ours, it's easier to dehumanize people who are fleeing from something and see them as a nuisance or someone that's coming to take something that's yours. And it's refreshing to see the way, you know, Poland and other neighboring countries have been and so open-hearted towards these people. So hopefully that ends soon. What else is going on? I went to the Oscar parties this week. On Sunday, I had a chance to go to the Vanity Fair party, as well as a party thrown by the one and only Jay-Z, the Jigga Man. I'm not going to lie, that was amazing. In the wake of the slap and all of that, It was interesting to be there. Everywhere I looked was like looking through my selections on like Netflix and Apple Plus and the Vanity Fair party. It was just like, oh, hey, what's up, you and you and you there? And wow, I love you on The Crown. I didn't say that, but I said that in my mind to the woman who plays the queen in season 3, where I'm at right now. Sorry, I can't remember her name. But it was pretty awesome. I met Daniel Kaluuya. That was pretty cool. I met Jay-Z and Beyonce. I'm not going to lie. That was pretty cool. Also, I was on the dance floor next to Rihanna and Zendaya, and I didn't freak out. Yeah, it was a moment. It was definitely a moment where I was like, can you believe this? This is where you are? Yeah, it was fun. It's weird. And a friend calls you and says, hey, do you want to... What if I told you I got you on the list for some cool shit? Would you throw on an outfit and go? And I said, yes, I will. And it was exciting to be an old man in the club. super fun. On the Will and Jada stuff, I mean, and Chris Rock, it was a I'm just going to leave it at this. A horrible situation that took place in front of all of us, humans being human beings, and all of it sucked, every part of it. But I don't think there's anything I can add to it, and I don't think it's really that important in the bigger stream of consciousness of time in the world that we are living in. So I will leave it at that. But the Oscar parties, they were amazing. And this week, I had the great honor of opening the Mami Wata pop-up surf shop on Abbot Kinney Boulevard in Venice Beach, California. Mami Wata Surf is a brand that I had the pleasure of co-founding and been a part of since 2018. You know, we aim to be a African-driven surf lifestyle brand, you know, opening people up to the idea of African surf culture, thus Afro surf. And it was amazing. It was so cool. And the store is, we worked really, really hard to get to this place to be able to open the store, especially in the midst of COVID when it, for a little while, we were like, are we still going to have a company? But fortunately, the book Afro Surf we did went really, really well and helped us build some narrative and tell some story and then get back to making some dope products. So if you haven't checked this out, I'm shamelessly self-pitching my brand. Go to mommywanttosurf.com. We also have an Afro Surf exhibit taking place at the Surf Heritage Museum in San Clemente. Went and did a talk down there last week, and that was special. I think that the exhibit runs for like the next 3 months or so. So if you're in San Clemente, go check it out. Thanks to Michael February for lending us some artifacts as well. If you're not familiar with Michael February, even if you've never surfed before, just look him up and then get back to me. You'll be like, oh, so that's what it looks like to play music on a surfboard. And he's from South Africa, and he's incredible. And what else? I don't know why I'm feeling like in this episode I want to give you guys a, hey, everyone, this is my life. But those are the things that I've been up to. Going snowboarding for work for the next 10 days, 9 days. Going to Canada and to Aspen with Burton Snowboards. I sit on the executive board at Burton. And, you know, one of the things that you have to do is they make you go snowboarding. And they make you go snowboarding at great places. So I'm excited to go be a part of that. We're doing a really cool event with Zeb Powell in Aspen called Culture Shifters. Basically bringing out lots of different artists across the landscape of entertainment and sports to go snowboarding with Zeb. And most of them are going to be from diverse backgrounds. And we're going to have some conversations about what it looks like to continue to storytell the larger expansion of what the outdoor culture and snowboarding culture looks like. It's going to be fun. I can't say all the names that are going, but you'll see. Sure, you'll see. We're going to do a bunch of cool content around it. So, yeah, I'm excited to be doing that. And I got to be honest, like, you know, a few months ago, I was in a very unsure space where I was starting to question whether or not the things that I have been doing, building the last few years, you know, had the chance to really come to fruition. So I was in a bunch of self-doubt, had some things, professional changes that had taken place with some of the people I work with, and I was just like suddenly like not looking at how much work has gone into the last 30 years. And I was pretending like I just got here and none of this is going to work out. And then a really close friend lovingly talked me off the ledge and told me to basically get over myself. Stopped expecting shit to just like appear when you want it. And remember that you never thought about the destination on the way here. that you only thought about the journey and you were always excited about what the journey was giving you. And I was like, yeah, I've never been like, this thing needs to become this thing at this time. That's never been how I've operated. It's always been, oh my gosh, I have an opportunity right there. And if I do, if I take advantage of it, I don't know what, but some really cool shit might come out of it. And that's kind of how I've always done things. If I see a crack in the window, I pretend that it's wide open and I just jump through with as much force and might as I can. So, but sometimes it's easy to get down on yourself and, you know, second guess yourself, even though, you know how to do something or you're really good at it. Suddenly you forget that you're good at it and that you've worked very hard to get there. And I don't know. It's above my pay grade to know all of the psychological reasons for why sometimes that's the loudest voice in the room. I think maybe I've talked about it before. The voice inside your head that if it was a real person, you'd never be friends with, but you take sometimes the most advice from. Yeah, strange. Which brings me to this episode of the What Shapes Us podcast. As you know, many of you know, I work for Red Bull on their media side. I've gotten to host a series called the Red Bull Signature Series for the last about 10 years or so. Get to do a lot of work with various athletes and help support some of their projects, Red Bull athletes across the landscape of sport. And recently, they called me to do a sit-down with three Red Bull athletes to talk to them about success, drive, their shortcomings, how they overcome them, mental health. Just kind of to really have this conversation that was going to be shown to all of the Red Bull employees to get them fired up for 2022. And also opening back up for people to come back into the office. So they were like, yeah, let's have an inspirational talk. And why don't we do so with like three elite pro athletes and see how they navigate things. And they called me in to be the question asker. And it ended up being basically a podcast, but in real life. And afterwards, I went to my colleague at Red Bull, Claude Merkel. Shout out to Chancellor Merkel. I said, hey, man, do you think maybe I'd get the audio of this? I think this would be a really good episode for What Shapes Us. And he said, yeah, let me talk to the peoples. And anyway, here we are. It is going to be, you're going to listen to it. And I'm excited about it. The three athletes couldn't be from kind of more different directions. Dassie Lee, she is an incredible dancer, professional dancer. You can check her out. Dassie Lee, she's on the Instagram. Hip hop, it's like just next level. She's from South Korea. And she has a great story about growing up and, you know, not having enough money to take dance lessons and having to audition to get in all of her classes in Korea. And long story short, making it to America and having this incredible career. Kate Courtney, who is a cross-country mountain biker. She is no joke. She's from Northern California. And Justin Williams, who's from Belize. He's Belizean, and he is a American road cyclist, black man, and he's absolutely killing it to the point that he's like redefining what bike culture looks like from a lifestyle perspective, and it's dope. He has this bike team called Legion. That's super diverse. Their outfits are fuego. I've never wanted to be in spandex ever. And then I saw what Justin Williams was doing with Legion. And I was like, yeah, all of this. He races specifically in an area called Crit, which you'll learn more about in the podcast. And so, yeah, to be able to have Dassie and Kate Courtney and Dassey Lee. These three sort of very interesting, diverse backgrounds into movement for a living. And, you know, they all have a commonality in this conversation. You know that moment when they realize the thing that they're passionate about, that they could actually get a chance to do for life, and how few people get to do that, and what that was like. They talk about the ups and downs of training and success, breaking norms in order to, find some more fuel, find some more opportunity to grow in what you love. They talk about procrastinating and just not wanting to do the thing, which when you think about pro athletes, you never think that they make it look like in all the ads, like they just get up, train with joy and then piss excellence. And it's so much more than that, especially between the ears, at a mental, emotional, heart level. We see the things that athletes do with their bodies, but between their ears and what those challenges look like, and athletes having the opportunity to be more open now about mental health and about their own emotional well-being, and taking breaks and stepping away to get right for you and all of those things. So please enjoy this episode. Sorry if I went too long in my life rant. But I just felt like sharing a lot today, and you guys always give me such wonderful feedback. And so I feel like when I show up, I'm just hanging out with y'all, and I could talk to you for hours, but I'm going to talk to some other people for an hour, and you're going to listen. Enjoy this episode with Dassey Lee, Kate Courtney, and Justin Williams here on the What Shapes Us podcast. And with that, I transition over to the conversation area. I'm really excited to hang out with all of you.
Same.
I'm sorry about the weather. Yesterday was 85 and sunny, and we would be out here in t-shirts and shorts, but also Los Angeles. In the wintertime, you get what you get. Where do I begin? Dassey Lee.
Hello.
Hello. I was hanging out with you this morning.
Yes.
On my laptop, watching you do your thing.
Oh yes. We need to make a pull-up video.
Yeah. Not very good. But I was blown away by your talent and just all the different places that you play in dance. I'm gonna say some things about you, and then you tell me if I'm right or if you wanna add to them.
Okay.
You're from South Korea.
Yes.
Where specifically?
Seoul.
Seoul.
Sorry. Yeah, big city.
Big city. Huge city.
Yes.
You were a contestant on So You Think You Can Dance. Yes?
Yes.
That's true.
Yes.
How did that affect your life?
I think that was the starting point of my career, actually, in America. I was here for... So I moved to America... in 2012, and at the time I came here with a student visa, so I was studying English. I wasn't speaking
English. You didn't speak English?
No.
You came here in 2012?
Yes, and then that was my first time actually speaking English.
I'm just laughing because if I moved to Korea in 2012 and we were having this conversation, I'm sorry,
yes, where are we? Oh, yeah, and then few years later, I got my artist visa, so I was able to compete on So You Think You Can Dance, and that was the start of my career.
Awesome. We'll talk more about how you got into dance. I'm going to shift over to Kate. Don't call me Katie. Courtney. Been working
good to
on
see
that.
You.
Yeah, it's great to see you as well. I was really excited to drop that joke, and I hope at least two people laughed.
Right here.
These two people right
crowd.
Here. You are the pride of Marin County.
I don't know. Maybe. But just, I'm definitely from there.
just own it. You won the under 23 American national title, correct?
Correct.
Silver at the World Championships in 2017.
And have pretty much been crushing mountain biking ever since.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been awesome. I grew up, little known fact about Marin is that it's actually where mountain biking was invented in the 60s and 70s, racing down Repack Fire Road. So I grew up with that culture of outdoors and sports and a love for riding my bike. And then in high school, got the opportunity to start racing, and I definitely never looked back and was hooked ever since.
All right. We're going to learn more about you, too. Okay. Moving on to Justin Williams. Justin, you're from Belize, but when you say that someone's from there, do you say Belizean or Belizean?
Belizean. My parents are actually Belizean. I'm first generation. My parents and my older brother are Belizean.
Okay.
But yeah, so you say Belizean.
Belizean.
Which is, yeah, it can get tricky in the Caribbean on what you say.
Yeah, the how it comes out. I've heard it different ways, so I had to ask you.
Yeah.
You ride bikes too, but you are in the Criterion Crit world,
correct? Yeah, it's a little bit more chaotic and kind of intense. It's a little bit more fast-paced kind of, the race happens really quickly.
All right. You are a founder of something called Legion that I see all over the interwebs.
Yeah.
People who don't even ride bikes are talking about. What, if to someone who knows nothing about your sport, how would you describe Legion?
It's just a rowdy group of dudes that like to have fun, dudes and girls now that like to have fun. We get to travel the country, live this really cool lifestyle. And it's just like, you know, everything that you would, you know, want out of a really cool kind of life and traveling around.
Mm.
Yeah.
How did all of you begin? Like, where was your entry point into, since we're already here, where did you start? As a kid in Los Angeles and being like, I want to ride bikes like this.
It was never really like that. Bikes had always been in my life kind of like on the outside, and I never really connected the dots. So my family on my mom's side, they come from a long line of cyclists. And this race in Belize called the Cross Country Cycling Classic. It happens in April. And so like my mom's family had won this race like 10 times or something.
No pressure.
It's crazy too. It was great that I didn't know about it. And then so my dad did it, and my dad never won it. And my dad did it maybe like 30 times, right? So like bikes were always into my life. We were a football family. So I grew up playing football and basketball, kind of like, you know, typical American sports. And then one off season, I was just like, I wanted to do something different. And my dad left a little bit rainy day, and like in California, if it rains a little bit, you don't go outside. So my dad put his bike on the trainer, and it was like, no, like bikes are expensive. My dad was, you don't touch my dad's bike. And I just jumped on, I was feeling brave. And I
was willing to risk it all.
I was like, I'm gonna risk it all, it's cool, it's fine. He won't hit me, it's cool. And so then I jumped on his bike, and that was like the start of this like path where I thought what my dad did was like Peloton. Right, I would see him go ride with a group of people, but I didn't know it was like a sport. And so that was the start of my journey to like starting to get introduced to cycling in just a different way, kind of learn like the physicalities of it and what it actually was. And then I got put into crit racing, and it was, the rest is history.
And briefly, if you could explain crit racing to a 5-year-old or someone who's like, I don't know. I know what bikes are. I see them in the streets. I see the spandex. What does crit mean?
It's just like similar to like NASCAR. You basically like, it's a compressed form of road racing, and you just go around in circles really fast, try not to crash, and then it's whoever crosses the line first wins the race.
So you got to utilize your team the same way as you would.
Team, drafting, tactics. You're basically playing this chess game at like 30 miles an hour, and you have these corners that you're entering into where positioning is everything, but five guys are going for the same spot in a field of 100 people. So it's just like constantly this shifting kind of board, and you're trying to like use your talent while also, like I said, avoiding crashes, avoiding kind of people doing crazy things, looking at what other people are trying to do to utilize their strengths. And you're trying to like figure all of that out within an hour. And then so that you have a chance of winning.
And chirping at each other.
Oh yeah, all the time. It's pretty impressive how much people are like, you guys talk to each other? I'm like, yeah. Yes. A lot of frustrations.
I may have heard a few bad words causing, thrown out between each other. Jassy, dancing. How did dance come into your life?
It came naturally. I was just, I was young. I was at like 8 years old, and I was just watching TV show and music video, of course, and singer just dancing. And I was just like picking up the choreography and just like dancing with my friends. We were teaching each other. And when there's a playground, there's a little platform, and then we were imagining that that's a stage. So we were like performing to nobody. So that was how I got into dance. And then things were just getting serious. And at the age of 12, I watched this TV show, So You Think You Can Dance. And I was like, I need to be in that show.
At 12.
Yes, I was watching American TV show in South Korea. And I was like, I need to go there. So I was planning everything from there. And then I moved to America because of that. Yeah.
As I said, I was watching some of your videos this morning. They were amazing. But then in reading your story, it was not an easy path for you. Taking classes, et cetera. Talk a little bit about how you grew up and what it took for you to actually get good at dance.
I think a lot of hours of training. I was really crazy about dance, and I wasn't a good student at school. what I did was like finish the school, going to the studio, take all the classes for free because my mom couldn't really support financially. So I auditioned to get into the team, and then I was taking classes for free, and then practice until 5 a.m. like whole night, and then take a first train to go to home, and then wash off, and then go to school, and sleep. Because all I was thinking about was dancing at the time. So I think just the passion just came automatically, and I just put a lot of work into it. And I think when I have something that I wanna do, I just go for it, at least at the time. So I think that's why I am in America right now.
Wow. Talk about manifesting your dreams.
Yeah.
12 years old, I'm going to be there, move to America, and then end up on that show.
Yes.
Wow. Kate?
So I got to follow that. Cool. When I was 12 years old, I didn't know that mountain bike racing existed. I thought that bikes were only raced in the Tour de France by men on roads. So I grew up, I fell in love with riding my mountain bike, and it was something I did on the weekends, but I did tons of other sports. I ski raced, I ran cross country, I rode horses, I, you know, had all these other outlets for kind of my athletic ambition. And I was pretty mediocre at all of them, but I worked really hard. And so I kind of, my parents, like, by high school had given up on me being an athlete. They were just like happy that I wanted to do stuff and would support me. And then my freshman year of high school, I found out my school had a mountain bike team, and I joined it partially just to cross train for running. And it was like something clicked. And suddenly that kind of work ethic, wanting to be alone and grind, really pays off in a sport like cycling. And I saw all these improvements. And then I raced in high school. And from the very first race, I just love the experience of competing. And it's something that it's technical, it's tactical, it's physical, it's mental, it's all of these things. And I felt like, one, it was just fun. Like, I just enjoyed the race itself. But I also saw all of these areas where I could improve. And suddenly I was like, okay, this is a home for my competitive spirit and also something that I love to do. And from that moment, I kind of, you know, took it step by step. I think similar to what you were saying, it's almost good. I didn't know the world of the sport and I didn't have these lofty ambitions or expectations. I just thought, oh, like I want a local race. Maybe we'll go to a national race or a statewide race. And then you just work up piece by piece. And eventually I got the opportunity to do it full time, which is pretty awesome.
I see you nodding your head, Justin. Like,
I mean, I'm just impressed. Yeah. Make me impressed.
But there's some similarities though, when she was talking about when you start to have a little bit of success.
Yeah.
What's it like to find that moment to be like, yes, like I love this, but I could do this. Like, this can be how I live my life. Yeah. I could do this. You remember when, for any of you, when you're like, no, I could do this for life?
Man, that was crazy for me, because I was really good at football and basketball. I was trying to figure out which one of those I wanted to do. And then when I started winning bike races and I started traveling, it like pulled me out of this mental space that you're in when you're a kid that grows up in South Central, right? Like you feel like your options are very limited. And getting on a bike, traveling the world, being kind of thrown into this community where the networking is amazing and you're talking to people. Like I didn't know marketing was a job before I got into cycling. And now it's like what we do, but like I didn't even know it was a job. And getting into the sport and seeing different parts of the country and talking to different people from every walk of life, it was just like this ah moment where I was like, yeah, no, I could do this. Like, I got introduced to cycling in a way that we're trying to introduce to the world now that it felt really cool. You know what I mean? I was like, you know, 15 or 16, traveling like the country, staying in hotel rooms with other 15 and 16-year-olds, like breaking shit and like, like, you know what I mean? And like going to gas stations at 12 o'clock at night to eat candy and stuff while also competing. But like, it was so fun. I was like, yeah, this could be my life. It was like, you felt like a little rock star. It was awesome.
And you still hitting the gas stations and destroying hotel rooms?
Sweet as fish, man, all day. Not to destroying the hotel rooms no more, but Corey keeps tight leash. But still having fun with it, man. Still traveling, still enjoying being in hotel rooms. Really like getting to enjoy things as an adult. Now it's like fancy restaurants and like cool bars and you know what I mean, stuff like that. Now you really get to go to these cities and go, what does the city have to offer? How do I take advantage of it? And how do I do that while still doing my job, but, you know, really living that experience. Mm-hmm.
You talk a little about making a different choice than other kids that look like you in South Central. Mm. What did that come with?
You know, it was really cool growing up and like starting to wear kits and stuff and riding back and forth, because like when someone from my neighborhood would see you and you were doing this thing that they never seen before, it was always like, yeah, man, go ahead. You know what I mean? And that was always really cool. And I thought being different and the opportunity to be different in a sport where like, once you get to high school, you know, what the percentages are of making it to the NFL, right? And I just felt like I had a better chance of doing this thing that was different in cycling, right? So it was like a crazy amount of support. I remember when I was in high school, I came out in the LA Times for cycling. I was doing this race called Seattle, and like everything changed. Like teachers were like, yeah, now you can make that up. Don't even worry about it. Like, you're good. And so like everything changed from there. And I was like, oh, cool. Like this is special. And I think from there, it was like a mindset shift, change. Yeah.
To be a modern day athlete professionally requires so much more than just doing your sport, like competing. There's such incredible amounts of preparation and nutrition, and you also have to act like you use the word marketing. You're also in charge of like telling your story, mm-hmm. putting yourself out there, making sure that people know that you're doing what you're doing. Mm-hmm. How do you build routine, a schedule to do all of those things?
Oh, why everybody's looking at me?
I don't know.
I was actually having a hard time in the beginning because all I did was practicing. And I didn't know how to deal with the contract. I didn't know how to like talk about the fees and stuff. But I think from over time, just I get experience like how I plan my day. For example, I wake up, I do short, like I work out like 30 minutes and then I go straight to the emailing work. And then after lunch, I will just go straight to the studio. So now I know how to divide my schedule to do everything, yeah.
I think that's interesting that you don't do the emails first. You choose to spend time with yourself soon as you wake up.
Yes, because otherwise I'll get too stressed. I like to move my body and sweat first in the morning, so then that day become really like productive. Mm. At least for me.
Same
for you. Yeah.
Same for me. It's like I block out my mornings now. Like I have so many things to do now. Like I had to really take the step to go from 6 a.m. to 11 a.m. I can't talk to anyone. Mm-hmm. And it's just like at the end of the day, you got to keep the number one thing number one. You know what I mean? So it's like, for me, like, my brothers are super hard on me. So like every time I even look a certain way, they're like, nah, like what's going on? And like, I have to refocus. So I think that's the first thing to what you were saying, like taking that moment to, you were talking earlier about spending that time in your morning and then what do you call it?
Meditating.
Meditating, right? Yeah. It's a form of it, right? When you wake up in the morning and the first thing you do is kind of like center yourself, get the blood moving, it's pretty amazing.
Okay.
Yeah. Same with me. I definitely have a big morning routine, and it involves meditating is probably the most important part of it. But I like to say for me in this phase of my career, what I'm doing on the bike, the training I'm doing to try to compete, it is the A task. You know, it's the most important thing. And time is not always my scarce resource. It's energy. So maybe I go for a 5-hour bike ride and I do these really hard intervals. There's a lot more than 5 hours in a day. But that's like all my energy for that day. And so being able to understand and honor what that effort requires, not only on the bike, but you know, from the moment I wake up, being able to be focused, to meditate, to keep that time focused on the task and not be distracted by emails, not be on a schedule that I feel like I should be on because it's the normal working schedule. But to be able to allocate that energy when it's needed and to have that focus and be in the mental space I need to be in to perform in that way on the bike, it comes at a cost with other things. And so that's been something I've had to learn to honor and respect and to put into place some systems to manage it so that, of course, I do answer my emails. And right. Of course, I do get my work done, but I... Sometimes, mostly. Eventually, okay? Eventually, that's
eventually,
the word.
Eventually, that's the word.
But yeah, understanding what am I gonna do with my A time, like with the time when I'm on and present and focused, what task comes to the top of the pile? And it might change day to day and might be different.
Yeah, imagine that there's your priorities and then there's the priorities of everyone else around you who's a part of what you're doing. And it's very, very easy. I find this in my own career that when I wake up and I look at that email box, I sometimes, you know, and I made the mistake of doing that this morning. I woke up this morning. I said, I'm going downstairs to work out. My girl was like, yeah, go get it. Put my gear on. I was like, I love you. I went downstairs and I opened my laptop.
No, never.
She came downstairs and she was like, oh. It looks like you didn't work out. I was like, yeah, I started working. And she said the most beautiful thing. She said, why? So why did you choose that instead of you? She's like, you can't do that. That's not part of your, you're out here talking about dare, build, and persevere. Like, don't do that. Save it for later. And it hit me. I was like, yeah, I shouldn't be doing
it. It's like the long-term gain, right? Like you, answering those emails, that short-term kind of like, I got something done. But like, you can be more productive if you get that workout first and then you, you know, move into the next things that you have, like to what Kate was saying. I think also you have to be very patient with yourself. And I think that we live in a society where like, everyone's so hard on themselves when they don't get something done perfectly. And it's like, it's impossible. Right, you have to be, I don't know about you guys, but with like this, which is with as much stuff that I have on my plate, like some things get missed, right? And usually they set you up. The great news is sometimes that sets you up for something better down the road. Mm-hmm. But you gotta be patient with yourself and allow yourself to go, all right, well, that was an L. Like if you don't take L's, you can't develop, you know, as a person. You can't learn from those moments and become better. Mm-hmm. So I think that patience with yourself is also a massive, massive, massive thing.
I agree. Yeah. I like to think about it a little bit too, and this is maybe a good one to think about with emails, as like, are you on defense or are you on offense? Are you responding to what's coming at you and just keeping everybody kind of happy, or are you taking the time to be able to put that energy and focus towards something that moves everyone forward? And that is that offensive play, not saying, okay, I'm just gonna, you know, kick the can every day down the road, but say, I've had the time, the space, the workout, the meditation that I need to see a clear path forward. And now maybe 10 of those emails are irrelevant because you've answered them or you've created a path that, you know, makes that sponsor happy or gets someone involved in a project that they care about or answers an email that didn't need to exist. And I think that's a good way of thinking about it, is being on that offense sometimes.
That was a whole TED Talk right there.
Let's go. Let's go.
Wow. What, the speaking fees just went up. No, that makes perfect sense. You know, where you're in charge of your story, and instead of having to, like, when you said that, like, just responding or reacting, I felt that. Like, when you're in that mode, mm-hmm. you're just like, I'm just trying to keep it all from falling apart, as opposed to, like, dictating, being able to
connect,
give people things to do that move the thing mm-hmm. forward. When you're in that space where you wake up, where you're just like, part of you is just like, not today. I don't want it. I don't want the schedule. I don't want the system. I just want to eat some things that are horrible for me. Like, I'm done today. But you don't have the choice to do so. How do you get past those moments? How do you engage with those moments?
I think I start digging music. Then 99% it works, I ended up dancing. So yeah, I just play the music that I love dancing to, then yeah, it always works. Mm. Yeah, for me.
Okay. Yeah.
Dancer. What about you?
What you got?
Yeah, I would say I kind of have a little bit of a double down mindset when I encounter challenges, when I have an off day, initial impulse is to always double down. Like, yeah. Okay, I'm gonna do more, I'm gonna go harder. And I think now I've tried to take a little bit of a more compassionate mindset with that, and to understand that when you meet the present moment and you understand, usually for me, when I feel that way, it's because I'm smoked. Yeah. Like, I've trained so hard, I put everything into it, and my body's saying, we need a moment. And that doesn't mean that I just throw up my hands at the sight of a little bit of exhaustion and don't do it. That's obviously a huge part of my job. But to understand what the feedback is that you're getting, and then to make that useful. So for me, that might mean actually adjusting a bit and saying, okay, this is a day where I'm a little more tired. I'm not gonna do the hardest workout possible on this day, or I'm not gonna use today to catch up on everything. Like, it's a day where you need to respect that feedback and still get the best you can out of the day. So get some kind of win. And for me, it's hard to compare because obviously my schedule can be a little more flexible, and it does require that my body's firing on all cylinders. So I can say, okay, today we're not gonna do as much. We're gonna take a rest day, and that's my win for today. But I think, you know, that exists in the workplace as well, where you have that A time, you have that A energy and that focus, and some days are about replenishing that and doing what you need to do to knock it out of the park the next day.
Mm. Love that.
That leads me to a subject that we're having more comfort in talking about, especially amongst athletes, which is what's going on between your ears, which in turn is connected to your heart. And that's the drive center for all of us in anything that we do. But mental health, I imagine, for you can go and you can ride as long and train in the gym as much as you want and dance mm-hmm. you know, until 5 a.m. But if you're mentally, emotionally not there, it limits your ability for what you're able to put out. What are some of the tools, what have you learned about yourselves when it comes to honoring and respecting your mental health?
It's been good. It's funny. I always, the first thing that comes into my head when you've asked these questions is my little brother Corey, because he's such a focused. We're almost opposite in a way, because he's so focused on where he's going. He's laser pointed. And for me, it's just about kind of rolling with the punches and taking things as they come. Not being so reactionary, but having the mindset that everything will change. It's inevitable. Change is inevitable. And I just have grown this resilience where just take that on the chin. If something changes, it's just you just pivot. And you try to do the best you can to make the best of the situation, right? And I think that mentally, that's been so great for me, because if you're constantly thinking that things are gonna change, even if you have a plan, when they do change, it's not the end of the world, right? And I think that's been so important in what we're doing, because we're trying to build this thing that has never existed before. And so you're going down this gravel road that isn't paved, and you're trying to, you kind of know which direction you're going in, but there's like some logs over here and there's some other stuff over here. And just like, again, going back to being patient, understanding that things will change, not being so set on something happening the way you thought it was gonna happen, just rolling with the punches. And I feel like it's a cliche, but like it's really what's, you know, made last year for us, especially with everything that's going on in the world, a lot easier, and mentally a lot easier, where, you know, you can just still be proud of and live in the moments that you get. You know what I mean?
In our pre-call, Dasi, you were talking about how, you know, obviously dance is about interaction. It's about energy in the studio, energy on the stage. And in the wake of COVID, suddenly you find yourself in front of your phone.
Yeah.
Having like battle people.
That was hard.
On TikTok. How did you work through that mentally?
I think going back to the one before, I totally agree with you. I was doing so much as a dancer because I feel like there were so many, like, countless years that I wasn't making any money as a dancer. So whenever there is a opportunity comes, I'm always in for it. So I was going. And then I got to the point where I burnt myself out. And then the COVID happened. So it was actually the first time I took my time to just reflect myself. What do I want to do? What I want to use this my time to? And during the COVID time, in the beginning, I was really depressed, of course, because dancers, we need to interact with each other, but I couldn't really do anything other than just training by myself. And I did some battles over phone with Instagram, and it was just so funny. Like, whoever has the best Wi-Fi gets to win. It's not about your dance skill, it's about Wi-Fi. And it wasn't really moving myself. And I stopped battling on the phone, and I just was using my time to doing other things to mentally make myself happy, which was painting. So I was painting a lot. And actually, that kind of led to more creative world within my dance style. So it was really good. And then last year, things got better from COVID for a while. So I was able to battle in person at Red Bull Dancer Style. And I can see all the dancers were going crazy happy, and like, the energy was amazing. So I think the COVID time was hard for dancers, but I think it was kind of necessary where we want to put ourselves as a professional dancer. I think it was necessary.
I like what you were talking about, painting informing your dancing. Like, what did you learn within dance from painting?
It's interesting. My dancer is very robotic, very like animated, and I create this piece with oil painting, drawing more like a really futuristic feature of woman, and I made that. And even from painting, I see the color working together, and just like, I don't know how to explain. It's just so subject. I just feel this like lively color, and I just practice with just imagination that I'm somewhere very colorful. Mm. It's a really hard to explain.
Oh, you're doing a great job.
or sometimes like when I'm painting, I will use very like smooth brush way. Then it's kind of reflecting my dance style to be more like wavy and very like groovy. So I think I have a lot of dancer friends that are painting and draw. So I think there are lots of weird similarity between dance and painting.
So
yeah, it's interesting.
That's
it's fun.
So cool.
It's really fun.
You were talking about like the performance presence. And I think I've been thinking a lot about this idea of like, it's not just mental, it's not just physical, but when you see someone do something at the highest level, there's like this extra characteristic. I've been referring to it as alchemy, where it's this like blending and this presence where it all comes together and you can't quite explain it.
Yeah.
But I love, I think what people don't see often is that those moments, we talked about this earlier, you have moments of sowing and reaping in especially creative careers. Like there was a moment of sowing where you were, you know, maybe doing less, painting, kind of retreating, taking time for yourself. And then later you have these amazing experiences where it all comes together and you maybe didn't know you were gonna find that alchemy. Yes. But I think that in our society, we don't often give the space for the sowing and for the moments that allow you to find that center and presence and direction and eventually have those performances where the alchemy is there. Mm.
Drawing away, being able to create like that sowing so that you, when you return back to the stage or the course or whatever, you're coming equipped with those things that people don't see.
Right.
You know, and that's one of the things that I admire about people like yourselves who, when you have to go out there and compete and perform, is like this idea that like the only thing that people are going to critique is what they see, is that moment. And you are judged totally on that moment. And I admire the fact that you're able to have that faith and trust in yourselves that like what they don't see is what is what's gonna actually enable me to be able to go out and give on those days.
It's like journey, right? It's like thinking about the journey and enjoying the journey, because once you get to that destination, you should have already put in the work, right? You've already spent the time. And if you did a good job and you were dedicated to it, you said something earlier about like your three action words, right? And that spoke to me so much, because like I kind of came into this year the same way. It was like grit, flexibility, and I had a third one. But I had these three words that were the same thing, right? It was like, this year is not about setting these goals, which it's weird for me because as a cyclist, I've always gone, I'm gonna win nationals, I'm gonna win this, I'm gonna win this, you know what I mean? And this year I got to that point and I was like, man, I just need to like buckle down when things get hard, while still taking the time for myself and having the patience and understanding. I gotta be flexible, I gotta roll with the punches, because we live in a world where things are always changing now, constantly. So you gotta be ready to pivot. And like, that has been like such a big kind of step for me. And I think growth in where I was when I was a little bit younger to where I am now, and how I've grown through the experiences that I've had, is like, those action words are important, right? Mm-hmm. Like, just focus in and pay attention to what you're feeling. Your body's gonna tell you how you're feeling, but also like read between the lines and kind of like, you know, don't be afraid to jump off the deep end sometimes.
Yeah, to listen.
Exactly.
We have some questions from the employees, because listen, I could sit here and we could do this literally to the sun goes down. I'm the energy right now, the vibe is high. But everybody on this side of the camera is like, that's cute. Also, wrap it up. So I want to make sure that the employee questions get in here. I'm going to start with someone who didn't give their name, coward. Guilty messy desker. Do you have a WFH station, work from home? Do you have a work from home station, and sort of what's your setup look like when you have to work, when you're working from home?
That's a good question. Ooh.
We've had some adjustment on this because now everybody works from home.
Yeah, exactly.
So we have one office, and it used to be my office, and it is no longer my office.
So it's not like rainbow jerseys and like...
No, it has been recaptured.
Oh,
I definitely, my office is often outside. I do like work at a computer a lot. But in terms of the messy desk thing, I think for me, I respond really strongly to environment and create an environment that brings about the way that I want to feel when I'm in that environment. So like, for example, let's say I sit on the couch when I watch TV, like I can't work there because that is not
100%
a high performance environment for me.
It's not.
It's not. And a good example of this is the home gym thing. So we actually redid our garage, and I wanted to make it a high performance environment. I trained there during most of COVID. And, you know, this year I realized that I have to change that environment to get myself into the mindset and performance level that I want to be at. And I ended up, I now drive and I have a private gym space where I train with a trainer. And there was a long time where I beat myself up saying, okay, like, I go into my home gym, it's also the garage. It's also, there's laundry there. It's my dog's in the other room.
Yeah.
People are coming in and out, asking me questions.
Yep.
And I just, no matter how hard I try, I feel like I'm not at my best and I'm like checking my phone or being distracted. And I made some changes and now I get in the car and I drive and I have never been more excited to go to the gym.
Yeah.
Like I love it. I can't wait to get in the car. I can't wait to get there. I make muffins every time. I train with my trainer. And my performance is better. I bring him muffins. And of course, like, not everyone can create an external environment that's like that, but I think you can take elements of it. And rather than, you know, overestimating the role of willpower, you can change the environment, change the structure to get you to be where you want to be.
Bang.
I love that.
Do any of you have...
Mine's a little bit different. My work environment is like, it's definitely away from home because you're absolutely right. Like, working at home is sometimes when, even if it's like in another room, like I had set up a room in my house where I was like, I'm gonna work here. And then like that kind of got cluttered and it was too much. And now we have an office. But my work environment is like a bunch of things that inspire me. So it's like national champion jerseys, signed jerseys from other riders that inspire me, which I need to get one from you.
Gotcha.
Like, you know, trinkets, like Supreme, like I got like Supreme locks, like just stuff that I think is really cool. And in an environment that makes me want to work hard. Like some of the stuff we did with like outreach for kids this year and just like seeing the smile on their faces. Like this is one picture of me and this little kid and he was like, I knew he could ride a bike, but he was like, pretending like he couldn't ride a bike. And me and him just spent laps, like just riding around, just stuff like all of those things, like on the days that you don't want to do it and like you want that out, it's when you can step into that environment. And my environment is like, it's like chaotic, it's crazy, but I love that because there's like something, I'm like stumbling upon like these really cool things all the time. And so I have that office space that I walk into and it's high performance, but it's messy. But it's messy. And like that does it for me where it's just like always something to go, yeah, that was really cool. Like we need to do that better. We need to do this bigger. So.
That's awesome.
I can relate to that.
What's that?
I relate to all of that. Yeah. Like, yeah, I get lazy sometimes in my room, but I think the music just makes me move. And also, in my room, I don't wear my shoes. And downstairs, we have a dancing place that we do dance with the shoes on. So, like, sometimes I dance, I practice in my room, then I would have some, like, very slippery dance styles comes out. So I feel like just, like, adapting to all the different situations, that's kind of fun, too. Yeah.
Music is also important. There's a bunch of fire playlists that go on. Sometimes if I'm mad, then J. Cole is on. If I'm sad, then I got some like, you know, oldies or some country on. But that's also hyper important to kind of get that vibe going.
Mm. Are any of y'all superstitious? Like before a race or performance, like are there things, rituals that you have to do before a race? Oh, you're not.
You're looking right at me.
I mean, I feel like
oh shit, for sure.
Oh, for sure.
Let's hear
for
it.
Sure.
Well, it's not as much superstitious. I think the mark of a good routine is that, or ritual, is that sometimes you don't do it and it's still fine.
Right.
Like it has to be flexible, especially when we're on the road. We don't know where we're going to be, how much time there's going to be before the race, what's going to happen. But for me, I think having a good ritual that gets you into the mindset to perform and reminds you of all the hard work. So for me, pre-bike race, like you're eating the same breakfast that you've had before every hard workout. You're drinking the same Red Bull. You're getting to the race at the same time. You're getting on the rollers at the same time. And yes, it's not that breakfast that like made the difference. And it's not the 20 minutes or 30 minutes you spend on the rollers, but it reminds you that you spent all year developing these things and doing these things, so you can go from that thinking to that trusting mode and be ready to kind of, you know, reap the fruits of that labor.
Mm. There's also freedom in routine, right? Like, if you know what you're gonna do, if it's on a time, you don't have to think about it. And if you don't have to think about it, you can focus on the race. And the and bike racing is super stressful. Like, no matter how old you get, that the anxiety of, like, before you start is always the same. So, like, having a routine to get to that place is the best. And I don't do, like, the old stuff I used to do. Like, I'll eat whatever for breakfast now because we race at night, so I have the whole day.
Fair.
And, like, I was on a team with this Australian guy, and I used to warm up. I used to, like, get on my bike and warm up and, like, do all this stuff. And he's like, man, you're good at crits. Like, you don't need to warm up, man. What's wrong with you? He's like, it's a waste of energy. He's like, you have an hour and a half to warm up. And so, like, that's changed a little bit. But for sure, like, I get there 3 hours before, go do registration. I know I'm going to have to talk to people, so I, like, make time for that. I get dressed an hour before. So that stuff is the same, and there's freedom in that, because then you can free your mind up to focus on, like, the big goal.
Be able to see what you're going to be doing.
Exactly.
How about before you get on stage?
No, it depends on everything. Like, whenever I'm battling, I try not to overthink too much. I try not to think that, oh, my God, I need to win. It's a competition. I try not to think that because I feel like I see myself. I tried everything before battling, but whenever I think that I need to win, I don't put myself free into the dancing world. Like, I need to be free. My soul needs to be free. I need to focus on myself. So I try not to overthink too much these days, and I just visualize with music, just having fun with my friends. Awesome. I think that works
Do you visualize before you start? Like, have you gone through, like, different situations that could happen in the race?
Yeah, it depends what the race is. Like, definitely, I use visualization a lot. But honestly, same as what you said. Like, I have to trust that at this point in my career, I've encountered so many of those situations. Yeah. I've gotten flats.
Yeah.
I've crashed. I've broken bones. Yeah. I've had those things go wrong. And if that happens, I know that I will respond to the best of my ability if I'm present in the moment. So really, when I visualize, like, a World Cup race or World Championships or some big race, I visualize myself alone executing the best of my ability. And similarly, like, almost like out with friends. Trying to envision that alchemy of doing it at my best.
It's interesting because we have six dudes on our team, and, like, everybody has to be on their game to adjust if something doesn't go perfectly, right? So it's really interesting having that component to what we do in Criterion Racing, because, like, there's a very high chance that, like, somebody won't make it to the finish because they're going to crash or they're going to get caught behind something or something's going to happen. So, like you said, that adjustment. I run through, like, I'm like Dr. What's the Marvel Doctor Strange when he's doing all of the
calculations.
That's what I do before every race. I'm like, if this happens, I'm going here. If this happens, I'm doing this. But at the end of the day, like you said, I've done it for so long that the experience of, like, just trusting the fact that, like, I'll adjust without even, you know, thinking about it, like, that's that sometimes works out better.
While I have you, Megan Mogul has a question specifically for you.
Damn.
She said, to Justin Williams, I'm a proud first-generation American Belizean. I am thrilled to see you as a Red Bull athlete. A family member of mine has your bulletin magazine framed at home.
Wow.
How do you plan to continue bringing light to your heritage through your talents?
Oh, no pressure.
Yeah, it's just all the police right now being like, yeah, how?
500,000 of them, so it's not that many, actually. No, I don't know. I've been lucky enough. My parents always would host people as they would make their transition from Belize to America. So it's always that giving and that understanding and that wanting to give back has always been massively important to me. Like, even right now with the Belizean national team, we brought them over for a couple races. Like, now we have the resources to really, like, spread things out and, like, give back to... Belize is a small country. It's 500,000 people or something, right? So, like, being able to create excitement, opportunity, and an understanding that if you work hard, like, there's something for you at the end of that has been, like, super important to me last year and then going into this year. And I have the support of my family, which is so cool. Like, my dad is like, my dad knows everybody in Belize, like, everyone. Like, I'll hear random people talking to me, and they're like, I know your dad. And I'm like, okay, I guess we're cool then.
I guess we're family.
I guess we're family then. So, I mean, I think just, like, continuing to do things to push the sport forward where I can and continuing to create opportunities for, you know, kids in Belize to like kids in America, to look up to something and look forward to something that, like, is meaningful, has impact, and is really cool and people respect and want to be a part of.
Listen, all three of you, like, to see the uniqueness of your journeys, but also the manner in which there's this distinct commonality, mm-hmm. I think it speaks to the entirety of everyone who works here at this brand. You know, like, everyone's got their individual nature and how they do things, but there's this place where we all intersect. And this, like, I feel selfishly like I should be paying y'all for what I've gotten out of this conversation. It's just great to get your insights and where you're at, and wish you all the best of luck in 2022 with your goals and with your energy, with the alchemy. And this is a wrap.
It takes a village to bring you the What Shapes Us podcast. Our incredible graphic design team at Parsons Branding. Music by the one and only Hugh Masekela and my band Alakazam. It is edited by Ernesto Hurtado and Will Broughton. Produced by yours truly, Salema Mabena Masekela. And directed by Ernesto Hurtado, a.k.a. Machete, and myself, Salema Masekela. The What Shapes Us podcast is a Rebel Talk Network production. Don't wanna see you burn. Please, they're gonna take your thunder.